Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right. In England every day, there's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. You have lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. We won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. To save England and the UK. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Yes, we certainly do. And good evening and welcome. We are back in 2021. The English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show, the truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, with the title of the show, is the English Defence League radio show Flying Into Fire. There's a reason behind that, which we'll go on to explain in a little while. Well, welcome to the English Defence League, a radio show with your host, Jeff Spider Mitchell, and my wingman for this evening is Dave Agador Milner. The team is rested and standing forth to meet the challenge of 2021. Across the planet, the left and their Islamic death cult allies have seized power through fraud, intimidation and open theft. The media we all trusted years and years ago, have become no better than government carnival barkers, shouting lies and propaganda for their cowardly masters. As we prepare for the future, we must resist the flames of hell on earth that the evil ones have created. Global patriots are ready. No surrender ever. And these two things I'm going to say now really does reflect on the things that's been in there for a long time. All that is necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. Of course, that was by the late, great Edmund Burke back in 1770. And this is probably the most important statement I think I can make here at this moment. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And of course, that was by the late, great President John F. Kennedy. So without further ado, let me bring on my host for this evening, and that's Dave Agador Milner. And it's over to you, Dave, and to everybody in the United States. God bless you guys. I know what's been going on. But Dave, back to you, mate.
All right, Jeff, and a good evening to you. And good evening to everybody in the UK, and good afternoon to everybody in the States. Hello to everyone around the world, and of course, off Earth. Yeah, we've got a few things to talk about here, just a few. Actually, we've got a massive, massive show, and we're going to get into that. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. I was thinking about this over the holiday break, and considering it, and praying on it, and things of that nature, and I've come to the decision that I will not be doing the Thursday shows with Jeff. Now, that doesn't mean the Thursday shows are going away. From here on out, after this show today, Jeff's going to be winging it by himself on Thursday and doing a magnificent job. He's going to be going old school like he did right at first. He's going to be picking out his own articles, playing his own music, and you guys are going to love it. I guarantee the women are just going to flock to this show with Jeff doing it. And I, of course, will be Jeff's second banana on Sunday, as always. Okay, and part of the reason for this, guys, is because they're basically tearing up the outside of my apartment building. And I am awake, whether I want to be or not, very early in the morning on every day of the week except Sunday. And on Thursdays, I'm not only doing this show, or I was not only doing this show, but I'm with Ken McClinton on TECN TV, on the Exceptional Conservative Show at 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, and that basically has had me up for 16, 18 hours, and I'll be honest with you guys. This has been going on for a few months, and basically since August, and by the time we did our magnificent Christmas show, my butt was dragging, and just physically, I can't do the Thursday shows anymore. That's the only reason that we're doing this, but Jeff knows that I'm going to be his wingman on Sunday, okay, and Jeff may even get a new sidekick to replace me. I'm easily replaceable, but there it is, guys. You know, I love being back. I love you guys, but I got to look after my health. And I'm sure Jeff will do a magnificent job on Thursdays. And Jeff, I know I know you have a statement that you wrote around New Year's. And I think that it is very appropriate for people to hear that one to kick this off, because we've decided, Jeff and myself, we usually have a theme for each year, and this is going to be the year of fire. Jeff, over to you, my brother.
Yes, I put this out on the 31st of December in 2020, quite late in the evening, actually, as I was preparing for the 2021. And I'll start out. This goes out to all my family, to my patriot and global freedom fighters. 2021 is, as I see it, is the dawning of the year of fire. Be under no illusions. Times will be tough. But as we have weathered similar situations in history, we will also do the same for this period of time. But we will prevail. We will not give up. We will never back down, and we will never, ever surrender. Happy New Year, brothers and sisters. The struggle continues. And I did get a lot of likes for that as well, by the way, Dave. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, and a Happy New Year from me as well. I know, guys, it's going to be a struggle this year. It's been said that this year will be worse than 2020. I kind of think that the year that we lost it all, which would be 2020, is going to be worse, because we know this year is going to suck, okay? And the suck has started early. We're going to have a lot of stuff involving the UK today on this show, but we can't begin without talking about this story, the shootings and the deaths that took place in Washington, D.C., after a pro-Trump rally, which took place there. I'm going to read this story off the Blaze, okay? And this headline begins here. San Diego woman fatally shot inside U.S. Capitol was 14-year veteran and strong supporter of Trump. Ashley Babbitt served four tours with U.S. Air Force. A woman was fatally shot Wednesday inside the U.S. Capitol building when a group of Trump supporters stormed the building following a rally protesting the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. And I won't read the rest of that paragraph, but because I will never accept the kitty-sniffing shit weasel as my president. Sorry for the language, guys, but that's what Captain Dementia is. All right? Now, to continue, graphic video circulated on the Internet showing the woman when she was struck along with the chaos of the scene. And now her identity has been revealed. Ashley Babbitt is the name of the victim. KUSI-TV reported that she was a 14-year veteran. She served four tours with the U.S. Air Force and was a high-level security officer throughout her time in service. Babbitt's husband spoke with the outlet, who relayed that his wife was a strong supporter of President Trump and was a great patriot to all who knew her. WTTG-TV reporter Lindsay Watts also confirmed Babbitt's identity by speaking with her family. Watts tweeted out a photo of the veteran, saying Babbitt owned a business with her husband, who did not come to D.C. with her. Babbitt's mother-in-law told Watts, "I really don't know why she decided to do this." Authorities are still investigating the incident and have not released the details surrounding Babbitt's death, including who shot the victim or if anyone has been arrested. That last bit, Jeff, makes me very suspicious And to her mother-in-law, I would say that Ashley Babbitt was there because a majority of voters in the United States of America had been told that their vote no longer counted and that their vote never would count again. That is why she was there, sweetie. Hey, Jeff, back to you for comment.
Yeah, and she was a patriot. Whether the mother-in-law didn't respect her being a patriot, that's exactly what she was. And she died being, well, she was a martyr, actually, because this was an assassination. I can't see anything else. I've seen it on Dana Lash, and she showed it over and over and over again. And I see this arm come out, point it directly at Ashley, and take her out. And that, to me, was an execution, ladies and gentlemen. And she's the first, well, three others died last night during the curfew. So let's be under no illusion that the government turned against its own people. And the people was in its own building. You know, when they say people stormed the building, the people had a right to be in the building. It was the people's building, you see? And to me, Ashley, I know I feel so sad for her husband, but be proud of your dear wife. She was a true patriot. She loved the country, and she was doing what she... And she wanted to die on her knees like they expect us to do, to take a knee and all that. No, Ashley was standing there defending what's right, what she felt she should do. And God bless Ashley and her family. And you know, there's not a lot more I can say. Is that unfortunately there was another three martyrs. I'm not sure the IDs of the others, but I know three other people died, Dave. That's what but we know Ashley has been formally identified. And it was tragic to watch. Absolutely tragic. There was no Trump supporters tooled up with any guns. There was no militia. These were people. The people have been taken out, executed by their own government. Do you know what, Dave? That does leave a bad taste in my mouth. To know that your government or the police of your government would take out one of our own. But I knew it was going to come. Knew that there was going to be, there will be a sacrifice, there will be a martyr along the course. Because this is what I'm saying. We now live in very dark times. But me being an optimist, believe that wherever the candle lurks, there's a candle glowing somewhere that we will fight on, we will continue, and if you call it a revolutionary stand, so be it. If this is a new 1778, and no one wants to fight, no one wants violence. Let's be honest, no one wants it. But when you're false, when you're not, that knowing that your vote does not count anymore, you have all options, you've taken all the options you can, you've pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. What else can the people do? And I'm going to leave that back to you, Dave. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff, thank you. And before we move off this story, we have to emphasize that there were agitators there who were trying to do violence and things like that. They had helmets and body armor and things like that. Those people were Antifa plants. They were Antifa, as Kel Fritzy used to put it, provocateurs. They went there to cause trouble. That was not the character of the people who were at that protest, at that rally. Now, I have that from good authority, from both family members of mine that were there, all right, and also from Carrie Baxter Donovan, who gave Ken McClinton a good interview about this. And you guys should check that out. Go on BitChute and look for Kenneth McClinton or The Exceptional One, all right, or TECN TV, any of those. Search in there, and you'll see his interview with Kerry Baxter Donovan from last night. According to Kerry Baxter Donovan, this was basically a setup. And Jeff, once I'm done, you know, I know you'll have certainly a comment, and certainly our EDL brothers and sisters can recognize this as the setup that it was. There were all sorts of chairs available outside. There were two bucket trucks, or cherry pickers, as we call them here in the States, that were out there with the keys inside. So, and the Capitol Police, who ordinarily do not let crowds of people just come into the Capitol, somehow, for some reason, let everybody in. Okay, so this was basically a setup. They wanted something for the lefty press to come out and say, see, all these Trump supporters are violent. Well, first of all, it was never about Trump. It was about the election system in our nation and how it has been destroyed. And second of all, that's what it was about. It was about these Antifa plants. There was one story that Kerry Baxter Donovan related of an Antifa a-hole wearing Trump gear, as well as all their other stuff that they wear, trying to, you know, breaking out windows with a riot shield, and one of the Trump supporters stopping them and saying, look, this is not us. We don't do this. And Jeff, I know as an EDL man, this is very depressingly familiar to you. Am I right, brother?
Oh, yes. This is like listening to saying how he was led through different towns in the EDL, led down a dark street, and then being bombarded from above with bricks and rocks and things like that. We've seen this. We've had it. We've had police lead, the Muslim Defence League into attack Tommy Robinson. The police led them and stood by and watched them while they bombarded women, children, men. So this is nothing new. It's except that we live in this time where you cannot trust none of them. You don't say nothing to anybody unless you know face-to-face, man-to-man, who they are. Because there's so many scroots out there. So many of them taking backhanders, working in league with the police, with everybody. You know, it's like a jungle. And it's no different. In the United States, it's bigger. But we've seen this. We've seen this. And we know what you experience. And my heart's broke of what I've seen happening to your president. And him standing up and fighting with all his might, taking them all on, fighting them off, one by one. Come on, bring it on. And then fighting them off. And then what you see, all the rats, the rhinos all turning their backs on Mr. Trump. He's an hero in my eyes. And he's, as far as I'm concerned, he'll continue to be a hero and probably the best president the country's ever seen. And I weep for the United States, this wonderful, wonderful country that I love so dearly. And I look out looking, and my friends like Dave and many, many other my patriotic friends out there, and I feel the grief. I feel it with you guys. Yeah, I'm a patriot. I love you patriots. I love you all guys. And we're all the same. We're like a family. You know, one gets, you know, when we have that lady being, you know, executed, my heart bled because that was one of ours. That was a family. That's one of our family members that's taken down. But that's just me. I'm very passionate because I do love my patriots. And I love you all, guys. If you're listening in, I love you all. And what you do, stand proud. Always stand and walk with your head held high because you're patriots. You love your country. And your country loves you. The right people do. Back to you, Dave.
All right, Jeff. Yeah, well, the only way that I want to conclude this, really, is to say that our thoughts and prayers do go out to Ashley Babbitt, her family and her friends, and to the family and friends of those others. And we warned you guys that that this was coming. We've been warning you guys for years that this was coming. And sadly, in the United States now, it's here. But we're going to move on. And I'm going to, Jeff, hand you a story. This is one that you found. And if you'd like to read it, it's in your Skype right now. It's one that you appreciated, so I'm going to turn it over.
Yeah, you must excuse my my parrot, ladies and gentlemen. She's a bit she's going into one a little bit. Anyway, this does warm the cockles of my heart up a little bit. I know it does to Dave, because most people know I'm a Millwall supporter. I'm a hardcore Millwall supporter. I was one of the originals, and I love my team. Win or lose, we tend to lose more than we do to win. It doesn't matter. It's not a family, and that's what I was saying earlier. The headlines are, Summer Likes Us. Meet the Russian Millwall fans who will swill London Pride beer at an English pub in Moscow and defend booing and taking a knee, so they defend what we did. Millwall fans are notorious for singing No One Likes Us, We Don't Care. But it turns out they actually do have a gang of loyal supporters, only they are 1,500 miles away in Russia. Gathered each week in Churchill's pub in Moscow to drink London's Pride beer and eat fish and chips is a dedicated cohort of Russian fans. My goodness, mate, I've warmed my heart up to see. There's some great pictures there, ladies and gentlemen. And there's one with Mash Protipenko Centre and his pals outside Churchill's pub in Moscow. And it shows the pub and that other stuff. It's just warmed my heart up. There's a pint on the table and fish and chips. Come on, guys. You know, that's what we're all about. Millwall fans enjoy a pint, a Blanner Pride, and a plate of fish and chips at their Churchill's pub. Calling themselves, listen to this, though, the Russian Lions. The Sun Online tracked down the supporters who said they were drawn to the London side despite living half the world away from the den. Pictures from the Churchill's pub in northeastern part of Russian capital shows it decked out in the Millwall memorabilia, including a cabinet for signed photos of club legends. It has a badge of the Millwall Supporters Club Russia on the wall, and hanging proudly is white ensign flag emblazoned with Millwall FC Russian Lions. And I'm really enjoying reading this, Dave. I really am. Pints of the London Pride and a bishop's finger can be seen on the table, along with plates of fish and chips and the Anglophiles tune in to watch their chosen club. And the supporters said they often come to the UK and visit the den that had been left unable to in 2020 due to the COVID-19. Speaking of their support, Russian fans said it was the side's working-class roots that most appealed to them, not their infamous reputation for hooliganism, but it is, and all know the rest is. Despite this, a number of the Moscow Lions branded jail sentences handed out to two Russian ultras who brutally attacked an England fan in France as harsh. Millwall's my second family. I've been in England at many home and games, including in Cardiff, at the FA Cup final against Manchester United in 2004. My goodness me, I remember that. Maxim Prokhorenko, 41, the head of the Russian Supporters Club, told the Sun Online, thanks to the Millwall family for their always warm welcome, for organising trips and tickets for matches, for sheltering us in London, for thousands of pints of beer brought for me in pubs. The Salmon Line spoke to the Russian fans after a storm hit Millwall when supporters at the Den booed players for taking a knee. Jeering fans were blasted by the FA and the EFL players and politicians, with even the club itself saying it was saddened by the scenes of the Den. Stuff you don't need to say how saddened you are. It's our club. We pay your wages, you muppets. But Prokhenko, an aircraft engineer, defended the scenes. However, insisted him and his pals are anti-racist, what most of us are. That's it. He claimed the gestures linked to the Black Lives Matter movement has turned off some Millwall fans, including those in Russia. And there's a little quote here. If all English football fans are afraid of Millwall, it will be a proper club to support. I love that, man. The fan blamed attacks on the war memorials and violent clashes with police for turning them away from the BLM. All English football supporters, including those of Millwall, support the anti-racism message. We will not support a political movement that disrespects our country, he said. And other Russian fans claimed the boos were driven by a desire to keep politics out of football, branding taking a knee, which has been adapted across the English football as a message of anti-racist solidarity, as posturing. Prokhenko explained he was introduced to the club while working with a British building firm on a job in Russia. Prokhenko said most of workers there were from Birmingham and supported Birmingham City, but two lads were Millwall fans. They told me about a small club, and the Brummies said Millwall fans are the most terrible and the craziest in the whole world. So I thought, that's it. This will be my choice. If all English football fans are afraid of Millwall, it will be a proper club to support. Millwall Supporters Club Russia helps the growing contingent of Lion fans in Vladimir Putin's nation to get to games, organising tickets and transport. However, all this has been put on a hold due to the COVID shit, he says. Prokhenko and his pals said they tried to get to the games at the Den two or three times a year. He shared with The Sun online numerous pictures of him at the ground, including posing with players and the club's former owner, Dragon Den's star, Theo Papadakis. And I love that guy as well, Papadakis. Prokhenko said, the fans are ordinary people, the descendants of dock workers. These are people who say and do what they think. It is very close to outsiders. One might say a family club. They do not like outsiders. But if you do get into the family, it will be 100% yours there. Fan groups for Millwall exist across Russian language, social media, site VK, with forums active where fans can discuss the Lions. The supporters club even run Red Bubble, a store where you can pick up Russian-themed Millwall merchandise, including face masks which read COVID-19 on Millwall. Prokhenko said the Dockers' support across Russia shows that Millwall is the biggest small club in the world. There's a bit more. Let me go on. I've got to, because it's not very often that you find other countries talking too much about us, because we are notorious as hooligans, aren't we, though? Russian Millwall fan Valery Kuzin, 49, told Sun Online, I wanted something to talk to my son about and had to choose a football team. I started watching everything. Accidentally, I stumbled upon Millwall. I like the intransigence on the field, the constant struggle, selflessness. In every moment, I began to support them. Dmitry Kukulkin, 46, from Moscow, another of the Russian Lions, added, in my opinion, it's all about the origin of the majority of the club's fans. This is such a close in spirit. Maybe a rough comparison, a clan group of ordinary working guys from the docks of London. People are simple, a little simple-minded, but honest and open to their own people, ready to stand up for themselves and for a friend, preventing others from being provocative. Hence the impression of hooligans among people far from such a life, although the guys are just friendly and know how to stand up for themselves when necessary. Russian football fans have been under international scrutiny since the 2016 Euros, despite a mostly incident-free 2018 World Cup after gangs of ultras took part in violent riots. Two thugs were nearly killed, an England fan were jailed for a combined total of 13 years earlier this month. The Russian Millwall fans told The Sun Online they found the sentence harsh and blamed the French police for failing to keep in control, but insisted they did not support violence. Poroshenko told The Sun Online, the fact that a person has suffered is very, very bad. But the fact that two people came to football and took part in an absurd drunken wall-to-wall fight received such a long prison sentence is also bad. Kukulkin added, the fights and riots are not uncommon during mass events, but no one has been punished so severely for this before. The fact that a person has suffered is, of course, very bad. But for the guys who went to watch football and not with the aim of crippling people. The Russian Lions were also confident that Millwall can find form, I hope so, in the new year after two of their games were cancelled due to COVID-19. And they hope to be able to make the 1,500-mile journey, that's a trip and a half, isn't it, though, to the Den in the new year once the world has returned to some kind of post-pandemic normal. Until then, we're at the Churchill's pub, Kosin told The Sun Online. Poroshenko added, we really hope the players will be able to shake things up after the new year and show us a good game. And with that, let me return to you, Dave, for some comments there. What did you think of that, Dave?
Well, Jeff, I had my mic muted, of course, but you know, I have to confess I was laughing when some of that stuff was being read. Yeah, I mean, you know me, I'm against the whole face mask thing, but I do like the face masks. So, and I think brothers might be confusing simple mindedness with honesty, and I think that's where it's at when it comes to that. And now, Jeff, I've given you a story, and I was going to give this to you during our Christmas show, but you know, I thought, it's a bit of a different themed Christmas show, but Jeff,
bloody
Jeff, I know,
God, man,
I know the spirit of Kel Fritzy is laughing her butt off right now. Over to you, brother.
Yeah. I can't believe it. I mean, oh, my God. Okay. Now, I'm going to try and compose myself because I'm just looking at this f***ing horrible thing. It's not I don't. I mean, spiders have got a beauty of their own. It's just I don't want them to cuddle up to one, you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. Woman finds massive spider lurking inside her gingerbread house. Oh, my God. It was a nightmare before Christmas. An Australian woman lived out every arachnophobe's worst fear after finding a giant spider with eggs lurking inside her gingerbread house packaging. This isn't what I ordered, jokes in his Katie Compass in a Monday Facebook post detailing the horrifying discovery. Accompanying photos showed a massive huntsman, I've seen that, big though, spider clutching an egg sac while perched amid webbing. that is wove inside the box. According to the Facebook post, Gomez had ordered a ready-made gingerbread house from local grocery chain Woolworths because she thought it would be easier than building one herself. Only in Australia, only in 2020, she lamented. And let me go down. Oh, my God, it's huge, man. It's huge. Oh, Dave, I think that's scared the crap out of you. You've got that walking around, mate. Fortunately, social media was quick to commiserate with her predicament. Are you frigging serious? Wrote one aghast commentator about the hairy squatter. That is a cancelled Christmas, said another. Another shared a gift of Kevin McAllister from Home Alone running around the house in fear. One Facebook comedian quipped, did they charge extra for the on-size residence? Huntsman spiders, which are known for their speed and ability to hunt, can grow nearly 1 foot in length. Do you hear that, Dave? 1 foot in length. Generally live in Australia, Africa, and other temperature climatic amazing in a 2020 study. Unfortunately, this isn't the first time a huntsman spider has infiltrated another's home. Last November, a woman opened a pygmy potassium box to find a whole colony of the hairy interlopers scuttling about inside. Oh, my God. I'm going to have nightmares tonight, aren't I? Oh, I'm going to pass it back to you, Dave. Cheers, mate. Oh, yeah.
Oh man!
That's what I saw that. Oh, what a golden penny, mate!
I saw that.
Foot long spider, mate, coming at you, and they run quick.
I saw that before Christmas, obviously, and I thought, yeah, I'll put this in. Okay, but then I was like, nah, I can't do that to Jeff for the Christmas show. I can't do that, you know. But
no, leave it to the bloody New Year, and it's in the right.
There you go. Well, it'll be the year of it's the year of fire, and who knows, it might even be the year of spiders. But you know, but we have plenty of creepy crawlies, Jeff, that are infiltrating our government and in our governments, obviously. But yeah,
I'm
that one. Teach that
the
one was
spiders. Go hunting them, Dave. I'm
oh
the
yeah, no
spiders.
Kidding. Yeah, you know, yeah. Train them to hunt those guys down. Yeah, now. We're going to move on to something else involving these lockdowns, because that's part of the reason, I'm sure, why that poor lady in Australia had to get that gingerbread house instead of building one, probably because it's so difficult to get out and get the things that you need to, you know, do proper baking and things like that. You know what I'm saying?
You could have got the spider to build it for her, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, Jeff, you don't know this. This wasn't in the article, but the spider, when she opened up the box, the spider said, "Wait a minute, I was headed to Jeff's house." And so, there you go. Anyway,
with
guys.
With a deep voice, what are you doing in my box?
There you are, yep.
You know his name is Boris. It's got to be Boris, isn't it? Come on.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Now, Jeff, do you want to, I know it's a few minutes. You got about 3 or so minutes before you have to call in. But would you like to call back in now or wait for this next story that we have? You decide.
No, I'll call back in now and then cool. We don't have to worry about it then for a while then.
All right.
Okay, Dave, I'm going to pass you the reins. Catch the mic, Dave. I'm just rubbing it to you. You got it?
Got it, Jeff. Got it. Got it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll see you in a minute. Bye.
Good deal. Okay, guys. Now, one of the things that is continuing in this year of fire is the whole lockdown culture thing. It's just, the governments have found a way to control people from cradle to grave, and they're using the lockdowns as means to do that. And I'll give you an idea of this, and this actually isn't my idea. This was a response to a post that I did. In fact, the post of this story that I'm going to play for you guys here in a moment. Okay, this was by someone named Paramagic, and this was done on Minds. That's one of the places where you can find me. I'm Dave Milner or Agador on many social media places, and Minds is one of them. And this individual posted this as a response. He said, just as Gates installed an operating system in our computers, now the vision is to install an operating system in our bodies and use, quote, viruses, end quote, to mandate an initial installation followed by regular updates. And that was a quote from Catherine Austin Fitz. Okay, now I'm going to go ahead, Jeff, welcome back. I'm going to go ahead and play this story. This story here is from Breitbart, and it came out on the yesterday, on the 6th. We've got a few from the 6th. So here we go, guys. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show. Check it out.
UK medical chief says COVID lockdown could be imposed again next Christmas, by Victoria Friedman on January 6, 2021. England's chief medical officer has said that there could be another lockdown next winter, seemingly regardless of whether the vaccine rollout is successful. Professor Chris Whitty made the remarks during a Downing Street press conference alongside Prime Minister Boris Johnson on Tuesday evening, predicting that even if the risk level for infection is lowered due to vaccine rollouts, the chief medical officer suggested that restrictions would be imposed on Britons for the foreseeable future. On Monday, Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a third national lockdown in England with effectively no firm end date, saying only that if things go well, restrictions may start to be lifted in late February. Less than 24 hours later, Senior Minister Michael Gove extended the soft deadline further, pushing it back to March. Whitty said of easing lockdown, what is going to happen over time is that the risk level is going to gradually decrease. Things will be able to be lifted by degrees, possibly at different rates in different parts of the country. He stopped short of saying that lockdown would be lifted entirely, saying, we'll then get, over time, to a point where people say, this level of risk is one that society is prepared to tolerate and lift down to almost no restrictions at all. Continuing that we might have to bring a few restrictions in next winter, for example. That is possible because winter will benefit the virus. However, he said that even once the virus is allegedly de-risked through the vaccination program, zero risk of death from the Chinese virus is simply not a realistic possibility, implying it was equally a political and societal decision on how many annual coronavirus deaths are acceptable, much like how British society has long accepted thousands of influenza deaths every winter. Professor Whitty said, just as we do with flu, every year roughly on an average year around 7,000 people die. In a bad year, up to 20,000 people a year die. We accept that there is a level of risk that society will tolerate, and we should tolerate. People die. That's one of the things that happens. We have to do that at a certain point. That's a political decision. That's a societal decision. Zero risk is not something which is a realistic possibility, he said. Vaccine Minister Nadeem Zahawi said on Wednesday that decisions on restrictions would remain with the government, telling Sky News, this will be a political decision when we get to the point of inflection between where community transmission is really impacted by the vaccination program and, of course, by continuing to ramp up the testing infrastructure in the United Kingdom. Then the decision for government, for us, is to say, well, you know, when is it right to begin to lift some of the non-pharmaceutical interventions that we're having to make, like the current lockdown that we are in. There will come a moment when we see where we can basically manage this virus and be able to bring it back under control. And that is a decision for the government. MPs are set to vote on the new lockdown measures on Wednesday, with The Telegraph reporting that MPs are expected to demand a deadline on when restrictions will end and clarity on how many people would need to be vaccinated before measures can be lifted. However, An MP told the newspaper that there will be no rebellion against the government, and the third lockdown is likely to be approved in the House of Commons.
And welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show. Here's Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff Huntsman Spider Mitchell.
Yes,
Jeff.
What exciting news, brother. So indefinitely, what can you say about this charade? How many deaths is acceptable? I don't like all this lockdown. It drives people crazy. It's just too much. And I think everybody is getting to people, you know. So we're talking, you know, this time next year, we might be still in a lockdown of some sort or other. Amazing. But these are the dark times we live, ladies and gentlemen. He's bleeding Chinese. Just let you know, Dave. Bigfoot's joined us, and he's wishing us both a happy new year to Jeff and Agatha. And God bless you too, Bigfoot. Happy new year to you, brother. So with that, Dave, let me pass it back to you. You know, it's grim, isn't it? You look around, mate. It's just grim, isn't it? You got to grit your teeth. You got to put your head up and say, stop it. I'm getting on with me life, and it is depressing. I just feel sorry for these people with mental health issues, Dave. God knows how many people are suffering with all this. So really, it's really soul-destroying for these poor people, because a lot of us have suffered with mental health issues, and if you've got over mental health issues, then you can sympathise with poor people that are going through it as we talk now. Dave, back to you.
Yeah, Jeff, and it really is tragic because people are dying from these lockdowns. Over here in the States, there was a kid who was taking part in one of these distance learning video call things for his school, and he just offed himself on the net that way. And that's not an isolated incident. It's just they just don't all happen like that. Suicides, all the things that we've been talking about, suicides, child abuse, spousal abuse, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, all these things that are going that are killing people. And it's all over a bad flu with less than 1% death rate. And these things don't even work. That's part of the problem. Okay, the whole thing, wearing masks, they have minimal effect. Studies have shown that. All right? The lockdowns. The Wuhan virus is still with us. It will never, ever be a time when we will be, that the article does state this correctly, 100% free of the virus. We're going to have to, at some point, decide that we have to run our societies, that we can't run our economies into the ground and destroy our people's souls, practically, just so that the government can control people's lives from cradle to grave. But this is the very thing that I've been talking about for 30 years. This is the thing that the left had been looking for. And they're still going hard on the propaganda, Jeff. Of course, I knew this would happen when we broke for the holidays, and I'm not surprised, though I am disgusted by this. And so that'll mean, guys, that if they have their way, when we do our Christmas show in December of this year, all right, there'll still be stupid mask wearing and lockdowns and all this garbage and people being arrested just for wanting to live their lives. It's disgusting. All right, Jeff, we've got another one.
Well, you never know with who you have in power then, Dave. They might cancel Christmas altogether, mightn't they? Because they're that type of horrible, disgusting people, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they are. Now, and Jeff, there is some defiance going on, and that's going to be in this next article here, because over the holidays, a few things happened, and we just did one about Christmas, even though it'll be Christmas of next year, that these people will still want to lock us down. All right, this has to do with New Year's, okay? And this one isn't in the UK, but the sentiment is still there. And everyone should check this one out. This was also done on the 6th from Breitbart. Okay, you are listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. Check this out, and check out what is being done by a certain church in Greece.
16 handed 6 months prison for organizing lockdown busting New Year's party. By Chris Tomlinson on January 6, 2021. A teenager was sentenced to 6 months in prison for organizing a New Year's Day party in the city of Thessaloniki in violation of Greece's Wuhan coronavirus lockdown measures. The 19-year-old was convicted at a Thessaloniki court this week, which found him guilty of violating the lockdown measures when he invited 9 friends to a party at an apartment owned by his grandmother on New Year's Day. The party was discovered when police were called to the apartment, located in the center of the city, following a complaint in the early hours of January 2, Greek newspaper Prototema reports. During his court appearance, the 19-year-old claimed that he had not seen his friends for 4 months but added that it was not his intention to have so many people in the apartment and that others showed up as the party was going on. In addition to the 6-month prison sentence, with an additional 3-year suspended sentence, the 19-year-old was fined €3,000 and the various party guests were fined €300. Following the new year, the Greek government announced it would be introducing even more restrictive lockdown measures in an effort to stop the spread of the Wuhan coronavirus. Part of the restrictions would include keeping churches closed for the celebration of Epiphany on January 6, but in a surprise move, the Greek Orthodox Church's Holy Synod stated it would be rejecting the restrictions this week. The church stated that it does not consent to the government's measures and noted that churches had all obeyed sanitary protocols over the Christmas period and would be sending a letter of protest to the Greek government. Greece is not the only country to see major fines and even prison time for violating Wuhan coronavirus lockdown restrictions. In Italy, residents can face as many as 6 years in prison if they lie to officials and break the lockdown measures. Follow Chris Tomlinson on Twitter at @TomlinsonCJ or email at tomlinson@breitbart.com.
And there you go, guys. Welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show.
Here
with Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, your views.
Yeah, it's draconic, isn't it? It's quite obvious, isn't it? It's a way to enforce power over people. It's disgusting. A 19-year-old kid gets... hadn't seen his friends for months, and he had invited a few around. Like any youngster, come on, Dave, well, I would have done the same. I would have probably ended up being put inside for 6 months if that was the case. I mean, but what has the guy done wrong? Really and truthfully, what has he done wrong? Like those other teenagers wouldn't do. And as I call, I just think it's draconic. Draconic, whatever you want to call it, I think it's disgusting that the way that they are, you know, using this power against people, youngsters as well, it's disgraceful. Hopefully, we'll see an end to this one day. I hope so, because it needs to be. We don't want to see kids being put in prison for stupid things. You know, done something wrong, and you know, go to prison, but not for something like that, Dave. It's a bloody joke, mate. Back to you, Dave.
Well, I have to agree, Jeff. Yeah, it is like a joke, and it's a terrible joke. And it's a terrible joke on society, especially when you consider the severity of this virus. You know, it really is a terrible thing. Here this guy is. He's going to have to pay thousands of euros in a fine. And even the people that went to the party, 300 euros apiece, just for going to a party to celebrate. Yeah, to celebrate New Year's. Okay, this is the kind of thing that turns the people against their governments. And this is the kind of thing that is going to have to stop and be resisted. See, if this is the thing, Jeff and listeners. If everybody were to resist all this lockdown crap, there's no way that the police in any country could arrest everyone. I mean, if everyone just said, we've had it, we're done, and just went out and started living their lives, there's no room in the prisons. Am I right, Jeff?
Well, I agree. I mean, it's just another thing. Well, I say it's got to be revolutionary. You've got to say enough's enough and make a stand. You know, form a line and say, that's it. We're not, you know, this is it. This is as far as we go with this bullshit. And don't keep trying to push us more, because we will resist you and we will take power from you if you continue. That's the warning I would give them, Dave. They've got to be told that if you keep pushing, you will be resisted and you will be overwhelmed and we will take power. That's the only one, the only thing that they understand. When you threaten to take away their power, they absolutely run around with their hair alight, mate. That is what you got. You got to be really tough on these people because they are trying to make our lives misery. Let's not let them do it, Dave. And our great listeners out there, all you patriots, God bless you guys. Let's stand and not let them do what they want to do. We will resist and we will prevail. Anyway, there you go, Dave.
Hey, well, it's excellent, Jeff. Every act of resistance, all right, is a blow for freedom and liberty. It doesn't matter what country you're in. All right, now, another
thing.
We
have got our global patriots, that's what I say. We speak to all of our patriots, global, you know, Hong Kong patriots, everybody that's situated in problematic countries. We say freedom is worth fighting for. Freedom is worth dying for. And God bless you guys for standing up against the oppression. Back to you, mate.
Yeah, okay. And I want to say a Happy New Year and God bless you as well to Bigfoot, who I forgot to say hello to.
Yeah,
all right.
Good man.
Now, and he runs Bigfoot's Place at blogspot.com. You can go there and check that out. Now,
which
guys,
is awesome. Let's give it a shot. It's awesome, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah. Guys, we're going to move on. Another thing that they're using to try and control us, this is the year of fire, and basically they want to burn everything down, including some of our most revered authors, some of the people who have shaped the minds of some of the greatest thinkers of certainly of the 20th century and the 21st century and times before, okay? I'm going to go ahead and put this one. We've had this for a while, but I think it's very apropos to do this, given other things that we located for this program. Okay, this was done on November the 24th, but consider who is the target in this and think about it. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show. This is from Breitbart.
The British Library adds George Orwell, Byron, and more to dubious list of shame, by Jack Montgomery on November 24, 2020. The British Library has added George Orwell, Lord Byron, Ted Hughes, and others to a list of shame for cultural figures with supposed links to slavery. George Orwell, real name Eric Arthur Blair, is perhaps most famous for his books Animal Farm and 1984, was an anti-imperialist and a socialist. Although not one who was afraid to call out the wrongdoings of contemporary communist regimes and their apologists. But the British Library saw fit to add him to its shame list because he had a great-grandfather who owned slaves in the Caribbean. His fortune was long gone by the time Orwell, the son of a sub-deputy opium agent in British India, was born, however, according to The Telegraph, citing the Orwell Society. The publicly funded National Library, the largest in the world, explained the list by saying that some items now at the British Library, previously owned by particular named figures cited on these pages, are associated with wealth obtained from enslaved people or through colonial violence, and that curators in the Printed Heritage Collections team have undertaken some research to identify these, as part of ongoing work to interpret and document the provenance and history of the printed collections under our care. It began the work after setting itself the goal of becoming an actively anti-racist organization in response to ongoing disorder related to the Black Lives Matter movement. Some of the figures on the same list had links to slavery and imperialism even more dubious than Orwell's. For example, the poet Ted Hughes, born in 1930, who was added because his ancestor Nicholas Farrar, born in 1592, had been involved in settling the first British colonies in North America hundreds of years before his birth. It's ridiculous to tar Hughes with a slave trade connection. And it's not a helpful way to think about writers, commented Sir Jonathan Bate, Hughes's biographer. Why on earth would you judge the quality of an artist's work on the basis of distant ancestors? He asked. Lord Byron, similar to Orwell, was added to the list because of a slave-owning great-grandfather, as well as a slave-owning uncle by marriage. Oscar Wilde was added because of his uncle's links to slavery. Although the British Library conceded there was no evidence Wilde benefited from any of the wealth this generated in its documents. The library's leadership is deeply invested in many aspects of woke ideology, having previously urged staff to support the Black Lives Matter movement and controversial labor politician Diane Abbott, while Chief Librarian Liz Jolly has claimed that racism is a creation of white people. Many of the books available at the British Library documenting the history of slavery and imperialism on the part of non-white polities would suggest this is not a factual statement. Follow Jack Montgomery on Twitter, at Jack Montgomery. Follow Breitbart London on Facebook, Breitbart London.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Nonsensical. And abysmal. That's three things that sums that up. It's a cultureless suicide. I don't know what to term it, Dave. It's this woke ideology that's out there and this Black Lives Matter crap that we hear all the time. And it's putting people that didn't have nothing to do with slavery. They got to go back to 15th century to find out being some a country being colonised by a great-great-great-grandfather. How woke and stupid can you get? I've always said this about the left, and I'm going to say retard. Retardation. It's not moving forward. It can't move forward. With ideas like that, this is a backward cultural ideology. It creates nothing but darkness because you're dragging us back to some dark time in history that none of us know anything about. We weren't born then. That's all I want to say about it, though, because it absolutely really pisses me off. There you go.
What? Jeff, I find it interesting that they chose to focus their investigations on people like George Orwell. And I think it has less to do with any connection to slavery his great-grandfather or whatever may have had, and it has more to do with the fact that his books Animal Farm and 1984 are seminal works, which, in my opinion, everyone should read. All right, these volumes talk about what happens when you have governments exactly like we have now. And I think that was why Orwell was targeted, quite frankly. And, okay, let's talk a little bit about slave owning and people who have connections to that. Kamala Harris, who is going to be the pretend vice president of the United States, evidently, has also a connection to slavery in the Caribbean. Okay, so is she going to get canceled? I rather doubt it. And if these people look into everyone, if they did this research for everyone, my guess is that almost every volume in the British Library would wind up on their quote-unquote list of shame. I think this is targeting. I think that it is purposeful when it comes to authors like Orwell. And as you say, I think it is shameful. All right. And we have more of this, Jeff. We have more of this because we're not done with the woke garbage. Okay.
No,
this one
just
here.
Beginning, Dave, of, in 2021, what we've seen happen in the United States, I could not see. Say 2 years ago, I couldn't see it happen because of how well your president had done. But unfortunately, we live in a dark time, a post-Trump time. Now I suppose you could call it a post-Trump era. Dave, that's you.
Well, I'm going to give you and the listeners another example. This doesn't have to do with books. This has to do with broadcast media. All right, and this one also came out yesterday. This is from Breitbart as well. Check this out. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Totalitarian woke state. UK regulator adds political opinion to hate speech rules. by Kurt Zindelka on January 6, 2021. Britain is becoming a totalitarian woke state, according to a former leader of the Conservative Party, as the UK's broadcasting regulator has expanded its definition of hate speech to include transgender intolerance and political or any other opinion. There are increasing fears that freedom of speech is in jeopardy in the UK as the regulatory body for media broadcasts in Britain, Ofcom, has broadened its code for hate speech. Previously, Ofcom required that broadcasts refrain from airing incitement to hatred based on sex, race, religion, or nationality. The regulator's new code, which came into place at 11 p.m. on New Year's Eve, now bars programs from all forms of expression which spread, incite, promote or justify hatred based on intolerance on the grounds of disability, ethnicity, social origin, gender, sex, gender reassignment, nationality, race, religion or belief, sexual orientation, color, genetic features, language, political or any other opinion, membership of a national minority, property, birth or age. In response to the move, the former leader of the Conservative Party, Sir Ian Duncan Smith, told the Daily Mail, "We are drifting into a totalitarian woke state where nothing can ever be said for fear that somebody will be offended. It's madness, and it's driven by a small minority. Most people don't care." In a statement on social media, the Reclaim Party, a new political concept founded by British actor Lawrence Fox and which is still going through the process of being recognized as an official party, said, "We are sleepwalking into a totalitarian state where the right to take offense trumps the right to free speech." Ofcom denied that the updated regulations would stifle freedom of speech, claiming that the new speech codes would not prevent anyone from appearing on television or radio because their views or actions have the potential to cause offense. The broadcast regulator said that it would be the responsibility of broadcasters to challenge the so-called hateful opinions of their guests. Ofcom received some 3,581 complaints from the public of supposed racial discrimination on British airwaves in 2019, up from 2,680 in 2018. The regulator also received 429 complaints of gender discrimination, compared to 310 in the previous year. The United Kingdom, which does not have First Amendment-style free speech protections like the United States, has also seen police embark on a campaign of logging thousands of so-called non-crime hate incidents in criminal databases. The hate offenses will present on criminal background checks, despite the person not having committed a real crime. Follow Kurt Zindelka on Twitter here, at Kurt Zindelka.
Hey, welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show with his host, Jeff Spider Mitchell. Jeff, what do you think, buddy?
Yeah, this, as I said, very interesting what they're sitting on there, because that is the time that we live in. It's a time of wokeness, isn't it? They were talking about this this party that opposes these views. Is it called Reclaim? I'm sure she said that it was the Reclaim Party, because I'm going to look into the Reclaim, because if they think their mindset is like how I think things should be, there's a party that I might be interested in. And that's just my view, and I'm not interested in politics, but I oppose anything with views of wokeness, and if they're a party of that, of anti-wokeness, I would oppose, and they'd be the type of a party that I would probably like to get involved with a bit more, Dave.
Right, and well, I'll just say that, okay, what Fox had to say was absolutely true. It's turning into a situation where you can't say anything about anything,
yep,
or anyone, and someone is going to get offended. I did a show, I think in 2018, that had to do with the Washington Redskins, an American football team over here. They now call it the Washington Football Team. How stupidly original. And I basically pointed out, I went through the names of all the NFL teams and showed how any of them could be considered to be offensive to someone. You can offend someone with any opinion or any subject or anything of any nature. And with these quote-unquote offenses, these quote-unquote non-criminal hate offenses being put on people's criminal backgrounds. Well, basically what that means, Jeff, is that people who are applying for jobs, things of that nature, maybe even for credit, things like that, will get red flagged because of these instances. I mean, you might as well be wearing face masks because no one will be able to say anything without being canceled. And you see this with Tommy Robinson, canceled with the possibility of being able to get a job, canceled with the possibility of being able to sit in a hotel and have a cup of tea with a friend, canceled in not being able to rent a car. I mean, this cancel culture is serious, serious stuff, my friend. We have one more item, but I'm going to throw it over to you for comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got a couple of comments by Bigfoot. He's just said, and it's relating back to something we were still discussing, the coronavirus has been a dream come true for the left. And he's so right. You're so right there, Bigfoot. He also goes on to say what you just was relating to, Dave. The Washington Redskins name has changed, but not the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's just something that he was talking to us both of the views, what he can see there, Dave. So, yeah, back to you, mate.
Well, yeah, Biggie. Just wait for it, brother. Just wait for it. It'll happen. It'll happen. I mean, I can't go through the list of the teams now, okay? But if I did, I guarantee you I could find something that would offend someone in all of the teams. You know, Kansas City Chiefs, there's already talk of possibly changing that name. And I know you can believe that. Because this has gotten to a point of medievalism. I mean, listeners, and yeah. Jeff, remember that scene out of Monty Python and the Holy Grail where they capture that woman and they take her to the knight and, you know, oh, she's a witch, burn her, you know, and but that is one of the funniest scenes out of that movie because, you know, this one guy in the crowd goes, she turned me into a newt. And the knight looks at him and says, you know, and you know, looks at him and he says, a newt, and this was the John Cleese character, and you know, he just goes like, well, I got better. it was funny stuff. Okay.
Oh,
but,
Dave, I mean, this is what we true classic comedy, and you beat it. But a lot of people now have got Monty Python. It's took them years and years to understand the comedy behind it, but now they've got it, and they, like yourself, love it. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
You know, it goes to show you. It's what people are starving. We're not seeing the real comedians now, the Robin Williams and all that sort of thing. The people have gone. But we look back and we remember Monty Python's. At that time, class is quite controversial. At the time, you know, chappies, don't you know? There's a bit near the mark, that was, you know. But we love it, man. It seems to it's matured like a good wine, hasn't it? That comedy, Dave, and we love it.
Right, it does, Jeff. And, of course, you couldn't run Monty Python's Flying Circus today. And I liked it from the moment that it was brought over into the States, what, about 77 or 78?
It's the thing. A lot of Americans, it took a little time to quite understand the British humour. But once they got it, and they couldn't get enough of it. It's like good sex, isn't it, Dave? Once you've got it good, you got enough.
Yeah, exactly. And
not
you know,
saying that Monty Python's anything like good sex, but no, it's just me thinking out loud. Dave, thank you.
And that's why people tune into the program, Jeff. And look forward to that next Thursday, people, because Jeff's going to be bringing it. Now, another comedian actually had something to say about this whole woke culture thing. And remember, guys, you know, as I say, you couldn't make and run Monty Python's Flying Circus today. A Monty Python troupe would never get off the ground. There's no way that they'd put it on the BBC. You couldn't do, over here in the United States, All in the Family. CBS would hurl before they'd produce that show. But that is the atmosphere we live in. And this is our final item, by the way, guys. And this one is from Breitbart. This was done on the 5th. Check this out, because the individual that they write about here speaks with a certain amount of authority. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Mr. Bean star Rowan Atkinson compares cancel culture to a medieval mob looking for someone to burn. By Hannah Blow on January 5, 2021. British actor Rowan Atkinson veered from the leftist views embraced by the bulk of those in the entertainment industry and ripped into cancel culture, describing it as the digital equivalent of the medieval mob roaming the streets looking for someone to burn. The problem we have online is that an algorithm decides what we want to see, which ends up creating a simplistic, binary view of society, the Mr. Bean actor said in an interview with the UK's Radio Times. It becomes a case of either you're with us or against us. And if you're against us, you deserve to be cancelled. The Johnny English star emphasized that it is crucial for society to be exposed to a wide spectrum of opinion, but concluded that, at this point, we have now is the digital equivalent of the medieval mob roaming the streets looking for someone to burn. So it is scary for anyone who's a victim of that mob, and it fills me with fear about the future, he added. Atkinson is not the only British star to take issue with the prevalence and impact of cancel culture in modern society. Ricky Gervais, creator of The Office, frequently crusades against the speech-crushing phenomenon. If it is choosing not to watch a comedian because you don't like them, that's everyone's right. But when people are trying to get someone fired because they don't like their opinion about something that's nothing to do with their job, that's what I call cancel culture, and that's not cool, Gervais said in an August interview with the Metro. You turning off your own TV isn't censorship, Gervais said, explaining the difference. You trying to get other people to turn off their TV because you don't like something they're watching, that's different. Earlier last year, Gervais spoke out against the rise of political correctness turned cancel culture, describing it as a weird sort of fascism of people thinking they know what you can say and what you can't. Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling stands as one of the most recent victims of cancel culture following her outspoken views on the negative impact transgender ideology has on women across the globe. In September, Twitter allowed hashtag RipgeCrowling to trend despite the fact that the famed author was not deceased. The trend purportedly stemmed from outrage over one of her latest books, which features a transvestite serial killer. The cancel culture mob came after her in vehement fashion, accusing her, again, of being transphobic, as they have for months due to her refusal to deny the reality of biological sex. Rowling is one of over 100 writers and academics who signed an open letter calling for the end of cancel culture last summer.
Wow.
And there you go, guys. Welcome back to the English Defense League radio show.
Yeah, I mean, this cancel culture, I mean, when you're speaking openly about what's going on, you're not allowed to speak your mind and to say the way that you feel about things. Now, you're supposed to just shut up and not say anything and let things that you find degrading go forth. Without saying anything. It's just what they expect, yeah. Well, people like ourselves, like me, I'll always say what's on my mind, and if people out there don't like it, tough you and your cancel culture. You know, if I find things degrading or disgusting, I will speak out against it. And the same as other people, more, you know, famous people, they speak their mind, and then you get this cancel culture just going after them, I think, is so disgusting. But that goes to show you the dark times that we live. Crazy times, Dave, isn't it? Dark and crazy times. Back to you, brother.
Yeah, Jeff. And, you know, you think of Rowan Atkinson, and he's not, of course, the first comedian to talk about cancel culture, because it hits them the hardest. Okay, I mean, we have a comic over here, or had a comic before he died, named Don Rickles. Okay, and he was an insult comic. I mean, that was how he did his thing. He'd come out on stage and he'd insult people. Okay, these days he'd be shot, and certainly he'd be canceled. Though, then I don't know. You'd have to take bets as to which would happen first, whether someone would shoot him or whether he would have all of his social media accounts shut down. Certainly, all of the googly type things would shut him down. Rowan Atkinson, by the way, for Americans who don't know him, had about three programs at least that I can remember over here on public TV. He had of course Mr. Bean. That one was, Jeff, I think that one was the most popular among Americans, really. But I preferred the shows he did. I think he did one called The Thin Blue Line, where he was a police inspector or something like that. And then, of course, Blackadder. Okay.
One of the popular. A lot of people really liked Blackadder. But then again, I like Mr. Bean. I mean, everybody's got their own type of humour. But at the same time, I just find Blackadder really funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about
Come
Mr.
On,
Bean...
Come on, Dave. Bullrick's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. The Mr. Bean thing... Okay, I think he did it almost as an experiment where, he didn't have to talk. But the bad thing about it, that was... That took away half his talent. I mean, sure, he was funny in Mr. Bean, but, again, I find the Thin Blue Line and Blackadder especially to be, especially some of the Blackadders, to be friggin' hilarious. Okay, but again, would the BBC put Blackadder on now? I don't think they would, because all of our countries have turned into what I call Offendistan. Okay, it has a very small minority decides now that something is offensive, and then it has to be canceled, and the person who does it has to be canceled. This is the kind of thing that was written about in Rules for Radicals over here in the United States. It is a way to ostracize certain members of society until they fall in line. And it is one of the things that is going to have to be fought vociferously in both our nations and in all of our nations. It's going to have to be resisted, just like the Wuhan virus lockdown stuff, just like mask wearing, just like totalitarian governments that want to run your local areas and things of that nature. This will be a year for people to resist. And it is, Jeff, the beginning of the year of fire. And that is it for our items, man. And, I just want to say that it's a great show.
What you're saying about the year of fire, I mean, with this country, with revolts and that, we had the Peasants' Revolt. We've had quite a few civil wars in this country, as you probably know, Dave, the War of the Roses and different civil wars. But the one where it was a peasants' revolt was back in the 1100s, 1200s, still talks about today. The people had had enough of the barons and all that taxing them to the hill, and they decided to rebel against it. And that is what you will see. The time that we live now, ladies and gentlemen, this time that we live is the time of like upcoming peasants' revolt. And I'm not calling us, we're all, back in the time, it's what we was called, commoners was called peasants, back with those noble ones, if you know what I'm saying. But that's the way it will come. It'll be them and against us, and us being the commoners. But there's more of us than them. That's why we will prevail in the end over anything that comes, any revolution or whatever. Overwhelming force is how we will defeat a very fearful enemy. But the casualties, that's where you got. I always think about that, don't you? The casualties that you will have, that will be felt. A lot of people wouldn't come for it. But that's what I'm saying. It's so serious to actually think in them, the mindset. But when all's been taken away, and, you know, you've got nothing else, you can't feed your family. So that's desperation. That's when people decide to take up arms and then to go and to defend what's right and for their family, for their friends and neighbours. That's what it all comes down to in the end. Am I right, Dave? Back to you, Dave, for your passing thoughts.
All right. Well, and I'll give my final as well after this. And yeah, you're right. It comes down to defending your own. And that's all we want to do is defend our own. We want to be left alone to run our lives.
Yeah.
It's about self-rule, as I say, here in the States. And I think it's what works best for people. All right? And you have dark forces out there, as you characterize them, Jeff, that are going to be against us this year. And we're going to be standing forth to meet them. And as I said at the start of the show, I won't be doing Thursday shows anymore, but Jeff is going to be doing a great Thursday show on his own, or he may have a new sidekick. So you guys may be seeing even less of me. He may get sick of me. At any rate, okay, guys, please check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. I've had stuff on there all through the break and still have stuff. My show times are 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and that is 6 p.m. in the U.K. And Saturday, it's going to be at midnight Eastern in the United States, and that's 5 a.m. Saturday in the U.K. And I will be on with Ken McClinton tonight on the Exceptional Conservative Show at TECNTV.com. And that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern here in the United States, and that is going to be at 2 a.m. Friday in the U.K., so don't miss that one. All right, and I'm also available on social media. I'm Agedor, A-G-G-E-D-O-R, or Dave Milner. I'm on MeWe, and I'm on Minds, Mumblet, Parler. Don't spend a lot of time on Parler, but I'm there, at least for show announcements. Spreely. Okay, I'm UBG Contact on Twitter. I'm available on USA Life, and I'm always Agedor on Gab. And I want to say to the foot soldiers, angels, and all of those who are giving just one little bit of resistance out there, that's all we need to do. Everyone needs to resist just a little bit, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. And eventually, it will be ours again. And I just want to say, be prosperous, be blessed, and in 2021, no surrender. Jeff, take us home, my brother.
Thank you, Dave. Yes, as I say, we've got another show coming up this Sunday. And then, I say, for next Thursday, I'll be doing something I ain't done for a little while. I'll be solo, but I might have someone on board. I don't know yet. I've got to talk to a few people, but I've got to thank Dave for helping out so much over the last few years with the first shows with me. He's been awesome, and he's going to still put my shows together for me. He's still going to do that. So, but, you know, he's got to take a bit of time to sort out. He's got, you know, they're building around him and that and causing all sorts of chaos. So, Dave, as usual, mate, you've been a blessing, this show, and everybody associated with the show thinks the world of what you've done. We do really appreciate it. And we'll be seeing you on Sundays anyway. So no problem. We ain't losing him altogether, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, Dave, cheers, pal. Once again, so we'll be back this Sunday. We'll be doing another show, maybe talking about those things of what's been going on over the last couple of days. But once again, my thoughts and prayers go out to Ashley and the family. What I see, I'm not going to get over seeing what I saw. Basically, execution, I suppose. The only thing I can look at, this lady was executed, ladies and gentlemen, a veteran, 14 years a veteran. So at this moment, I've got a very heavy heart, and of course the other three people that lost their lives as well.
and probably all good patriots, and you'd be sadly missed. Any patriot, anybody that loves the country, you die in them type of circumstances, you are martyrs. You're martyrs. You don't know that, but you become a martyr. Never, never forget people like yourselves. We never forget our martyrs. But so with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say we'll be back again this Sunday. So I'm going to say cheers, Dave. And thank you for the guy that was sitting in the studio with us this evening, or lady, should I say. I don't know. And Bigfoot, as usual, brother, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Been really appreciate it. So with that, I'm going to play us out. We're going to go underground with the jam. The big white, they're just strolling in. And with that, take it away, guys. The jam coming underground.
I'm so happy, I can't see the fine things happening here today. A show of strength with your five brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course, than mine. My nuclear test was far from its prime. Then the public gets what the public wants. Pleasure as a hate me, I've been enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging green and black. To be here, so what you get? You made your bed, you better lie in it. You choose your leader, and don't waste your trust. And the lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up.
We are done and dusted for this show for tonight, and we will see you again this Sunday. So you take care, you stay safe, and resist, resist, resist. Never give up, never give in, and never, ever surrender. See you Sunday, guys. God bless you all. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.